Welcome to Short Hops, powered by SideLeague.com. Derek Van Riper here, as always, with Bernie Pleskoff, moving through the second week of the 2015 Big League season. Bernie, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm great, DVR. It's been a weird season. How are you doing?
Pretty good. You know, it's been a lot of fun so far. I've already gone to one big league game, and of course, got to a minor league game on Sunday. So we'll talk about what I saw up in Appleton for the Low A Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, Midwest League team, an affiliate of the Milwaukee Brewers. They played Peoria that day, so got to see some Cardinals prospects there as well. But let's kick things off this week with some early season observations. The pitching matchup I have looked forward to the most as we've gotten this season underway happened last Thursday, actually. It was Matt Harvey versus Steven Strasburg. Harvey was better than Strasburg, and frankly, Matt Harvey looks just like the guy he was before Tommy John surgery.
It's really pretty amazing, isn't it? You know, this is the guy that I saw after his first start here in Arizona 2 years ago, and he's a horse. There's just, it's going to be very tough to get the ball out of this guy's hands if he's into, let's say, the sixth or seventh inning and they want to limit his innings. I mean, he might bite his manager. Who knows? This guy is who you want on your team if you are in Major League Baseball. He is just a bulldog.
I feel like if we were drafting again today for a mixed league, he would go even earlier than he did in the drafts that I had throughout the spring, with the exception of the NFBC main event, where he went 16th overall. I think he was the fourth starting pitcher taken in that league. But I think that would be something you'd see more consistently, is Harvey kind of going in that 5 to 8 range among starters, because for anyone who takes him, you're going to have someone to replace him if and when he's skipped in the rotation or if he gets shut down later in the year. Depending on what the Mets do, it really remains to be seen. But there's a chance that he's so pitch efficient that he can still consistently go 6 innings on a start-by-start basis, even though he is on a workload cap.
Well, let's not forget, in a lot of drafts, no one knew how healthy he would be. So that impacted where he fell. And even after one or two starts, there's still a little doubt in your mind. Not much, maybe a couple percent. But I'll tell you what, I'm convinced. Look at their three guys of Colon and Harvey and DeGrom. And that says to me, they're going to be in 3 out of 5 games every time.
And they still have Noah Syndergaard in the minor league system, yeah, Knocking on the door from AAA. So I think there's a pretty good chance we're going to see Syndergaard up at some point this year once injuries strike. And they're going to really go without missing a beat, I think, in terms of their pitching. It's a matter of how that offense puts runs on the board consistently and whether or not that's going to be good enough to push them into wild card contention. And I think they've got the pieces, but I just think they lack depth. And we're going to talk about a key injury they suffered this week that may be one of the Achilles heels of this team over the course of the year. But in that duel with Steven Strasburg, I mean, Harvey, as I said, he looked like vintage Harvey. Steven Strasburg through 2 starts hasn't looked like the Strasburg I was expecting. A big part of it, Bernie, he's not getting swinging strikes. He's had 2 starts now. The most recent one came Tuesday night against Boston. I believe he had 5 swinging strikes against Boston and 6 in his first start against the Mets. Typically a good starter, one who's going to strike out as many guys as Strasburg can, will get low double digits, if not more. Even mid to high teens is normal for an elite pitcher. I'm just a little bit surprised that the stuff hasn't really been that crisp through 2 starts for Steven Strasburg.
Well, you know, I think he will build arm strength and velocity as the season goes on. But I've got him as a good pitcher, DVR. He's not a guy. He's not a star. He's in between. He's a good pitcher. I don't think he will ever live up to the hype that preceded him coming to the big leagues. We just thought this guy was the second coming. And he's a good pitcher. There's no doubt in my mind. And he's not a guy. He's much better than that. But I would say he's certainly not a star in my estimation yet.
I think he's still there. I mean, 242 Ks last year and 215 innings. To me, there's only a handful of guys that are even capable of doing that. Strasburg did it with a 3.14 ERA and a 1.12 WHIP, but maybe there's a slight disconnect between what he actually is and what we think he could be, to the point where he gets drafted as a top five starting pitcher, and I was certainly on board with doing that, but maybe he is more of like a 10 to 12 or even top 15 starting pitcher, which is still excellent, still very good, but if you're taking him consistently a round or a round and a half earlier than he's actually going to give value for, then you're going to be disappointed, even though the results really aren't that bad.
I think there are some pitchers who are coming on that are just shocking the baseball world with their command. And with let me give you an example, Shane Green. You know, I targeted Shane Green in our grass ball draft, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Shane Green is a guy that has such good control and command so far, knock on wood. I don't want it to change. But that's what I saw during the spring training videos that I watched, and that's what I saw last year from this guy. You know, he's going to pitch to contact. You're not going to get a lot of strikeouts in fantasy. But in a league like grass ball that looks at quality starts as opposed to just strikeouts, this is a very good pitcher.
It was Shane Green, and we saw a strikeout per inning last year with the Yankees, and the first couple starts this year, he's been more efficient. Thing I've seen really this year and last year, a lot of ground balls. Is he one of those guys that could have that massive breakout this year? Could he be a top 20 starting pitcher at season's end? Is that the high end of what he might do?
I don't know if he'll be top 20, but yes, I think he's going to have a massive breakout, and that's why he was a target of mine, simply because if you remember in spring training, he was mowing them down then. And we drafted after his first start. His first start was awesome. Plus, you have to look at who he's pitching for. He's going to get a ton of run support, so I think he's going to be in games not through the fifth inning, but he'll get quality starts into the sixth and seventh. I think he'll give up less than three runs, and I think that he will be winning games 5-3, 7-3, maybe shutting out guys like he's done so far. He is definitely on my radar as a shooting star.
A few other observations here from the first week and change of the season. I'm a little bit worried about Mark Melancon. He's showing diminished velocity, and I know that Clint Hurdle wouldn't go so far as to say he's concerned at this point. But with Melancon, the margin for error, if he's working 2 or 3 miles per hour below his velocity marks from last year, I feel like gets a lot smaller. I thought he entered the season as one of those safe closers who could pretty much only lose his job if he gets hurt. But now I'm starting to think that maybe he is hurt. I mean, that's the major concern. How much with lost velocity do you think can be attributed simply to mechanics, and how much of it is often the result of an injury?
I think it's a combination of both. But see, with a closer, that's different. You really have to have, if you have two pitches, you really have to have velocity on your fastball. You're going to be kind of pedestrian if you don't, and you may become a middle reliever or a long man, because if you can go in there and throw 97, change the eye levels of pitchers, throw in an occasional slider or a changeup, that's enough to get by. But anything else, I think you're going to need more pitches, and I worry about him. Let me talk about one of my other, a couple other observations so far in this season. One of them, and you've got to be disappointed at this DVR, because I think you were an Evan Gattis fan. Am I mistaken on that?
I expect Evan Gattis to hit a lot of home runs because he's going to play more than he did as a catcher. But fan of Evan Gattis might be a stretch. I think I liked him more than you did for sure, though.
I'm a little bit concerned about the fact that I mentioned this on the radio today, that I haven't seen him making adjustments on the inside pitches. He's striking out a ton, as are the Astros, by the way, which we predicted. The other thing that I want to mention is the nice start for Alex Guerrero, who has finally found a roadmap to playing time, and that's an injury to Juan Uribe. Now, I don't know if the guy can play full-time because I think he's defensively challenged. I think his footwork is kind of slow at second and at third, to be honest with you, but he's got a big league bat. That's what they're paying for. And if he comes in and spot starts for Guerrero and even for at shortstop and second, I don't know that he'll ever play shortstop, but maybe at second, Guerrero's a valuable piece for the Dodgers. I like how he started.
Yeah, I think if they get comfortable enough with his defense at third base, you could see him getting a couple starts per week. But I continually worry about his lack of true versatility, even though they've moved him around a lot. I don't think they like him at those spots. There's two kinds of versatile players, guys that can't play anywhere who have to try playing all over, and guys who play all over because they can play all over. Guerrero falls into the first group, which is not necessarily a good thing. But Juan Uribe is old. Juan Uribe is on the hefty side, if I'm putting it nicely. And Juan Uribe has had issues with his hamstring before. He missed time last season with a similar injury. So if he hits the DL at some point, I could see Guerrero having stretches where he's kind of a must-use type of player just because of the lineup that he's in and the impact of the bat. The question becomes, can he do enough as a part-time player to draw interest from other clubs who may think he's a viable option defensively, or at least an upgrade to the point where they'll take the hit defensively for the sake of getting his bat as part of a trade with the Dodgers?
Well, I'm not sure. That's the same question. He might be one, and then Yosmani Tomas, who, by the way, was recalled today and is now on the Diamondbacks roster, he may be 1A. Those two guys are very similar to me, but I like Guerrero's bat much more than Tomas so far. And frankly, for the life of me, I cannot figure out why they brought up Tomas today, DVR. Do you have any insight into that? Because I certainly do not. He will be coming off the bench, and he will not be getting the repetition he needs in left field or at third base. It really makes me scratch my head.
Yeah, all it's going to do is potentially take some playing time away from David Peralta or Ender Inciarte, and it creates a logjam. It wasn't as though for five games he was on fire at Reno, and five games isn't a sample size you would make a real sort of decision on anyway. The explanation I saw is that the Diamondbacks want him to be with the big league coaching staff because they feel like he'll benefit more from that than being with the Reno coaching staff at AAA. I don't know if that's the actual reason or if that's just the reported reason, but he doesn't fit. I mean, I keep coming back to this. He does not fit on that roster, and I think it is going to be a lot like the Alex Guerrero problem. I had someone tweet at me when they heard about this news this afternoon, said, should I pick up Tomas? Do you think he's going to be like Jose Abreu? Like, no. I mean, if you've listened to anything I've said or read anything I've ever written about Tomas, it doesn't suggest that he's going to be even a good player, let alone an elite player like Jose Abreu. I mean, they're similar only in the sense that they are both Cuban-born people. That's about it. That's about where the similarities end.
So, in essence, he's like the glove in the O.J. Simpson trial. He does not fit.
There you go. Right. That's another way to put it for sure. I mean, I don't see how the Diamondbacks get him involved, barring an injury either at third base to Jake Lamb or at first base to Paul Goldschmidt, even though I don't think Tomas has ever played first base, so that's probably not an option, but at least they could move guys around and possibly make it fit that way. Trumbo could play first base in that case, but if Goldschmidt gets hurt, the Diamondbacks have bigger problems. This has not made sense and will not make sense unless Tomas begins to tear the cover off the ball, and I don't expect him to do that.
He has one home run in those five games, and I'll tell you what, it's a little bit, it really is perplexing, and I know we've talked about him a lot, but I wanted to bring him up in context of Guerrero. I think Guerrero is a much better hitter, although he's a pull side hitter versus Tomas, who's hitting the ball to right center with a later swing and not as much bat speed, in my opinion. I just don't get it. And David Peralta, who hits fastballs like you would not believe off of right-handed pitchers, can't get playing time right now. It's even going to get worse if, in fact, you've got a factor in Tomas. But let's move on. Anybody else interest you so far?
Yeah, Trevor Bauer. I mean, he's showing some things that are intriguing. Our colleague Jason Collette posted a GIF that I was looking at from his first start. Bauer was using his two-seam fastball really effectively against the Astros. I was doing the radio show during most of his start today, so I didn't get to watch it very closely. But it seemed like he was using that two-seamer a little bit again. I saw him tie up Giovanni Soto with that pitch. I wonder with Bauer if this is the breakout year or if it's the small step year and next year could be the full breakout that many people have been waiting for.
You know, I told you I traded him for Rick Porcello, and I did it for two reasons. One is the wildness and whip does count. He will still walk 5-6 guys in the 6 innings he pitches. And the second one is that I felt they'll go to the bullpen quickly with him because his pitch count will be elevated by the 5th inning, and the league is one where quality starts count. That's why I traded Trevor Bauer. I may be sorry I did it. He looks very good, but two, and this is very important. What I'm going to say now is, I think, very important. 2 weeks does not a season make. Guys have gotten off to great starts, who I'm suspect about, and guys have scuffled who I think will do better. I'd like to talk about a couple of those, if you don't mind.
Sure. I mean, I've got one I want to throw out there first, and we'll hear some of yours too. Hisashi Iwakuma isn't really the same guy I expected, looking at what he's done through a couple of starts. If you look at the start Tuesday night in particular against the Mariners, or should say against the Dodgers rather, he couldn't control the slider. He kept leaving the slider up. Andre Ethier homered off of Hisashi Iwakuma. And Andre Ethier at this point, Bernie, to me, is a fourth outfielder at best. I mean, if that pitch isn't working for Iwakuma, I think he's going to have a lot of trouble in the first half of the season.
Yeah, he was on my list too, as a matter of fact. And I'll tell you what, he's a much better pitcher than we've seen, and I think he will be. I think it's a matter of going back to the film room, looking at your extension and what you did when you threw the slider. And I haven't seen him pitch this year. Is he throwing across his body more? Is he not finishing his pitches? There will be a tweak that he will figure out because he's too good. I think he comes back. One guy on my list is, again, Didi Gregorius, who I'm very worried about. I'm worried about, because somebody tweeted me and said, will the Yankees lose patience with Didi Gregorius? He's hitting less than 200. You know, I don't think he's a 200 hitter. I think he's a 250 hitter. And I think in Yankee Stadium, once he gets settled in, he will hit 250. But will he get the chance? Or will the same thing happen there that happened in Arizona? Can't play against left-handed pitching. Maybe you can't even hit right-handed pitching. So now you're not going to be our shortstop anymore.
I think he has to be pretty bad offensively to fall out of the playing time against righties, though, because defensively, they don't have a lot of viable alternatives right now. I mean, the lack of health for Brendan Ryan has been a problem for a couple of seasons now. I just think that Gregorius is reasonably safe, but the debate, of course, for fantasy owners, how much will he actually hit? I've never really been on him as a hitter. We'll see what happens. I mean, maybe you see 8 to 10 home runs from him over the course of the year with like 230, 240 average. If he hits your expectation, 250, he's playable in some deeper formats, but I've just never been that excited about what he's going to do offensively, and I think he benefits right now from the Yankees not having many viable alternatives.
He's a great defender. And you asked me the question, you haven't asked it yet on this cast, but you wrote it to me. When can you tell if a hitter is hitting over his skis, to put it in my terms? And when can you tell if he should be yanked? Is that about what you're asking me?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, it's here's what we got to. This conversation started, I think, during the XM show on Wednesday. And it's kind of important because you have to be able to react to what's happening early in the season appropriately. You know, when does a slump, a slow start, when does that turn into something more? When does that mean you need to actually make a decision, whether that's to cut a player because it's a lower-end guy or to possibly trade away a player because someone else in the league might think he's bouncing back, but you realize he's not going to. And at the flip side, when does a fast start matter? When does Shane Green become a top 40 pitcher instead of a top 75 pitcher, for example? When do you actually make a change to the way you are valuing players based on what you're seeing in season?
Okay, let me tackle that in several different ways. A lot of it depends upon the team the person is playing for. If they're going nowhere and they're not expected to win, you're going to be more patient with the player as the team, not on your fantasy team. They're two totally different things. If you have a guy that's hitting beyond expectations, Kendrys Morales is hitting over 400. Well, he's not going to hit over 400. He's not going to hit 350. He may hit over 300. So you realize that. But you also realize that your team may not be going anywhere. In that case, they are going somewhere. And it's a great thing if you have minor fantasy team. Conversely, if you got a guy that isn't playing well, isn't hitting well, and you have high expectations, and you're looking at your closer and seeing him blow saves, every single game is going to count for you. You may pull that closer quicker than you would if you were just another team. If you're in a pennant race, you need every win. You need every save. If you're trying to develop a player as a shortstop, as a second baseman, if the guy's name is Devon Travis and you see him hitting three home runs in the first 2 weeks, you say to yourself, he may not hit that the rest of the year, but I'm going to play this guy the rest of the year because I think he's better than anyone we have. And I think in our situation, I want him to get big league at bats. And it's really that simple. How much is his contract? Where is our team going? And how much do I want this guy to succeed? I don't want any of my guys to fail, but when do I change the deck chairs?
So, I mean, a lot of it's reading the team and looking at their context, and a lot of it also hinges on, well, yeah, I mean, it depends what they have for alternatives. For a team like Toronto, if they don't play Devon Travis at second base, they're playing Steve Tolleson at second base, or eventually Macer is tourist. The alternatives are very soft. They're not guys that you want to build around long term, whereas Travis could be their starting second baseman for the next 6 years. He could easily be that type of player.
Okay, let me give you another example. What if you're the Angels at second base?
I think you punted second base months ago with your entire offseason plan. By not addressing it, you decided you're going to have a revolving door there. So if you get to a point where Johnny Giovitella is not hitting at all for a stretch of 3 or even 4 weeks, you spin things around, you spin the wheel again, you reshuffle the deck chairs, as you said.
Exactly.
You bring somebody else in. And if it turns out to be a case where you don't find somebody, either within the organization, a waiver claim, whatever it might be, between now and July 31st, then you go out and you find an experienced player on a team that's selling pieces off, and you upgrade then. So I just think that the hardest thing to do, though, is to actually read what an MLB team is going to do, because this time of year, all 30 teams have some form of playoff aspirations, no matter how unrealistic it might be for some clubs. They all think they're at least going to be good enough to make the playoffs as a wild card. So getting inside the head of a team like the Reds, what are the Reds doing with Jason Marquis right now? Like, why would they have Jason Marquis taking the ball every fifth day? Why is he a part of their
plans? Because they don't have a better option. They don't have a better alternative. They just got rid of Daniel Corsino, which shocked me because he's got a good arm. You know, and they'll probably, you know, they DFA'd him, so if nobody wants him, he goes down in the organization. And that's why it's so team-specific. If they're deep, he's not on their club, but they're not deep. They don't have the starting pitching. He's the best option they have. The Indians sent out Markham today. They DFA'd him. They realized that he wasn't going to get claimed. Now he's in the minor leagues, and you can bet your life that if they stretch him out and one of these, either the four or the five, really get into deep trouble, you're going to see Shashin or you're going to see Markham.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, too, is a lot of teams want to stockpile their depth. But a guy like Daniel Corsino, by the way, that's exactly the player the Reds should not be giving up on. They have Kevin Gregg throwing meaningful innings. Kevin Gregg is done. It's over for Kevin Gregg. And Corsino's been a starter his entire minor league career. In the worst case scenario for him right now, he goes into your bullpen and you see what he can do in mop-up duty just to see if, as a reliever, he can iron out some of his control issues. But instead you DFA him and keep Kevin Gregg. If I'm a Reds fan, I'm eating Skyline chili until I pass out because I'm so depressed about what this team is going to become.
Well, that's why I was shocked when it happened, and I tweeted it out, because I really felt that there's something we don't know. Because when I saw the guy, granted it was quite a while ago, his arm was so good that they were buzzing about him on the back fields where I saw him. Literally buzzing about his mid-90s fastball, but he has never straightened it out. He's never gotten it together. But I wonder if the arm is bad. We just don't know. Shashin's another example, DVR. Lost 3 miles off his fastball. Can he get it back? the Indians think he can, or they wouldn't have given him a minor league deal.
The other question I have pertaining to the Indians in this conversation, how did Sean Markham actually clear waivers? How did the Reds not look at Sean Markham and say, well, he's better than Jason Marquis, we'll claim him?
That's a great question.
How did Milwaukee not claim him?
I really do not know. I thought he was gone, and I thought it was a mistake. As a matter of fact, I had a waiver claim in on him, and I pulled it because they DFA'd him. So I don't know.
Very frustrating when you can't predict what teams are going to do. But, I mean, just getting back to the original crux of the question, aside from having to predict what major league teams are going to do, you have to also have metrics. You have to have your own observations that you use and decide when what you've seen is meaningful. And I think it's very player specific. I don't think there's a set number of at bats that you're going to say, well, I've seen 40 at bats from this player. They've all been bad at bats. I'm out on him. There's got to be another reason. You have to dig deeper. You have to find out, was there an injury this spring that might have slowed him down? You know, for a pitcher, mechanically, has something changed? We talked about Melanson. His release point has been higher so far this year. And he's also only had one bad outing. He had two scoreless innings before getting roughed up in a non-save situation by the Tigers, which the Tigers are going to rough up pitchers all season long. So
tell me about it.
You know, you have to balance the information and the tiny sample sizes with some kind of appropriate amount of just rational thought.
Well, you have to look at, there's so much to look at. First of all, how much is the guy making? How many options does he have left, if any? It really takes guys in the front office who work that every single day and have all the available information they need to make those decisions. But quite frankly, the average guy and the average person that is not on the team, and that includes other scouts, you do not know what's in the mind of the front office unless you're sitting around that table.
Absolutely true. And just something that on the outside, we're often left scratching our heads, certainly.
DVR, let me give you an example. You know, we all read about Johnny Manziel before he was drafted, right? We all knew everything there was to know about his character and off-the-field antics, correct?
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, he parties. To put it really simply, he parties. And many people his age party in very similar ways.
But he gained a reputation. That's my point. And he also played in an offense that was, and we're getting into football here, that was not the type of offense the Browns have ever run. Yet the Browns drafted him, correct? They made a front office decision to draft Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, now, he was pretty clearly the best option.
They want to know why.
I don't even know how people question it, though. At the time, he was clearly the best option on the board.
Oh, I think plenty of people question it. Why did he drop to them?
I think people who question it, they just love the revisionist history aspect of it.
I don't know.
If he had played great over the last four games, if he looked like he did when he first came onto the field against the Bills, that was the game where he played well. I think they still lost, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, the point with Johnny Manziel, I think, is just he's one of those polarizing players who people decided they liked him or didn't like him from day one, and they're not going to waver on that. Period. They're never going to. Anytime he makes a mistake, even if he becomes a good NFL quarterback, the Johnny Manziel haters will always surface when he comes up short. I guarantee it. He's just that kind of player. He's a lightning rod.
I guess my point is this, that guys sitting around that table have information, data, and opinions that the public will never know for why they do what they do. And that's it. And it happens in every single organization. You ask yourself, why is Max Scherzer not a closer for the Arizona Diamondbacks? And if he is, how could you trade Max Scherzer? Okay? Well, there was a reason for it.
Right.
My point is, there's a lot of inside baseball.
I think that's a fair way to look at it, but it definitely makes things more difficult to not know what those thoughts are, not to not have all that information, to have missing pieces of the puzzle.
That's
makes
right.
It all that more difficult to make a decision, especially, you know, early in the year in particular. Hey, baseball fans, are you tired of losing on those other daily fantasy sites? Then download SideLeague for iOS or Android and start winning. SideLeague levels the playing field by offering 25-person contests with no salary cap. By automatically pairing you with friends, SideLeague ensures you don't end up competing in huge contests full of sharks. You've never had a better chance to win? Go to SideLeague.com now and download SideLeague for Android or iPhone. Use the promo code SHORT1 for a free $5 deposit. Bernie, we alluded to this as we started the episode. There have been a lot of injuries over the first 10 days or so here of the season. The one big one for the Mets, this is the one I hinted at before, David Wright has hit the 15-day DL with a hamstring injury. Based on what the Mets are saying right now, they expect Wright back in approximately 3 weeks. If he's back in 3 weeks, and if he's actually healthy after 3 weeks, I think they can stay afloat without him offensively. They've got a little more balance than they had in previous years. And if he's actually healthy from May on and can be the player we saw prior to the shoulder injury last year, just then, maybe just then, the Mets offense will be good enough over the course of this season to help push this team into the playoffs.
Well, I still think they're going to have to pitch themselves into the playoffs. I worry about David Wright's hamstring because I worry about all hamstrings. But Jonathan Lucroy proved me wrong. He came back much sooner than I thought he would. And remember, I said I wouldn't draft him because of the hamstring. And here he is, you know. So I don't know about David Wright. He's got some age on him, too. It's a serious issue. However, Michael Bourne spent all year fighting hamstrings. This year he looks healthy, but he spent all last year over and over again was Groundhog's Day for Michael Bourne.
Every player is different. I mean, with Michael Bourne, he had surgery on his hamstring, so he had a much more severe tear. Yeah, but I mean, I think when you're talking about a player his age, too, who relies so heavily on his speed, it becomes even more problematic. But then again, look at Ryan Zimmerman, for example, last year. He also had a hamstring injury and missed a couple of months with the injury. It took him a long time to get back. So, you know, it's all a matter of, again, it's the information. How severe is it? How quickly did they catch it? How much will he be rested? There's a lot of variables here. I'm a little bit concerned. I thought Wright was a nice value in drafts. I'm glad I didn't end up with him everywhere because he was priced in a way where that was possible, but the injury history continues to grow for David Wright, and the Mets don't really have a great built-in replacement. I think Eric Campbell is the guy that might pick up some extra time at third. Maybe they reconfigure some things with their defensive alignment, but with a three-week injury, I think they would generally skew away from doing that. I want to talk about the Indians, Bernie. Carlos Carrasco got hit by a comebacker in his start on Tuesday. Just dealing with some soreness on both sides of his jaw. Apparently did not suffer a concussion. I'm a little bit surprised, only because...
Total miracle. Well, it was a miracle.
Terry Francona said he was non-responsive when Francona went out to the mound. So I'm curious to know how being non-responsive is not actually a concussion symptom.
Well, it was shock. He was in shock. I mean, he just didn't know what hit him. And it went from his hand to his jaw. And when it hit his jaw, he went out, and he was in shock, I believe, because they had to cart him off the field. Now, I don't know how it's not going to affect him, because if it doesn't affect him physically, why wouldn't it affect him mentally? You know, I'm throwing a ball. Could this happen again? We'll have to see. His start has been pushed back a day. They really dodged a bullet, and thank God for Carrasco not being any worse. It's so scary to be that close to that lethal swing, the ball coming at you. Oh, just unbelievable.
It seems like things are okay, but I'm on the side that says take the he's going to start Monday news from the Indians with the appropriate grain of salt, because it can often take a full day for those symptoms to present. If something happened today and it hasn't been reported yet, you know, we may not find out about it until this weekend, but keep tabs on it for sure.
Derek, that's a two-start week. Do you sit him?
Well, I got to make that call on Monday. I mean, if nothing changes between right now and Monday, you've got to plan on using him.
Yeah, you better look and see if there's day games Monday, because you may not have all day to make that decision. That's a tough call, because if it's a two-start week, which it will be, and you're sitting him and he pitches well, you know, you may just have to roll the dice and say, go ahead with him. I mean, that's something you have to look at on Monday, like you said, but I think he's going to pitch. I have not seen anything to the contrary. How effectively he pitches is the bigger question.
There's no way to know how a player can mentally respond to something like that. Think about Aroldis Chapman. He came back from getting hit in the head by a liner. He was the same guy when he came back. Other players, it's been different. So complete mystery as far as what we're going to get from Carrasco as he comes back from a pretty scary incident there on Tuesday night. One other injury for the Indians, Michael Brantley, still sidelined by a back injury, might be ready to return on Friday. The White Sox had a pair of lefties going Tuesday and Wednesday, which I think played into the decision to rest him. I think he took batting practice Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. But Brantley is a guy I don't have anywhere, Bernie. I missed out on him completely. What do you think about Brantley now that he's got this injury that he's dealing with?
I would still go after him. I tried to get him in Graspo, and I couldn't do it. It was too expensive. But I'll tell you what, he had clean MRI, which showed no structural damage. It's more than likely muscular, and it's going to flare up. It's not a herniated disc, or that would have come out. So I just don't know what the answer is going to be. I think he's going to miss time this year, but I think he conveniently could get rest days against tough lefties, but he hits them well. So I'm not bailing on him yet. It's only been 2 weeks. Let's watch and see what happens. But this could keep flaring up.
Kristen Yelich also missing games here with a back injury. He was scratched from the lineup Tuesday, missed Wednesday's matinee against the Braves. Also, Ichiro Suzuki picking up the extra playing time there. As far as Yelich goes, any reason that this is different than the ailment that Brantley's dealing with?
I think it's probably similar. I would say I wouldn't panic on either of these guys. They're too good, and we're just going to have to wait and see. Next week, we may change our story. We'll have another, you know, week to discuss this or to contemplate this. But right now, I'd keep Brantley in and certainly Yelich.
All the players you like seem like they're banged up right now. Cole Calhoun's been out of the lineup with a calf injury. He's not going to start again until Friday at the earliest. I feel like if it's going to take longer than Friday, there's a chance he'll end up on the DL, even though if that happens, it doesn't sound like it's going to be more than a 15-day minimum situation, at least based on what I've seen so far. But Calhoun, off to a slow start, only 6 games, 5 for 21 so far, does have a home run. 5 strikeouts and no walks. I only have him, I think, in one league. I think I got him in the stake league, and it wasn't because I was targeting him. It was just because he was one of the few players who actually went below my projected dollar value.
Yeah, I know, and I still like him, and he'll be back. And he, I'm not sure he was on my guys I like this year list. He may not have been, but I went back and looked at my guys I like this year, and thank God so far they're all coming through.
Garrett Richards made a rehab start Tuesday, could return as soon as Sunday. He did get knocked around a little bit. Yeah, they it's not a lock. TBA officially listed as the starter for Sunday. Hopefully at some point before the weekend, the Angels will clarify that. He threw at least 90 pitches, though, in that rehab start. I think it was 91 pitches for Garrett Richards. So he is completely stretched out. Hinjin Ryu.
We lock staff league and stake league on Friday. So I have a decision to make.
I know.
It's a tough one. It's not like locking on Monday.
They might announce it before Friday, though. There's a good chance even that they'll know what their plans are because they have to line up a replacement for him if they're going to go that route. They sent Drew Rachinski down to AAA after he started yesterday, Tuesday's game, so he's out of the mix. Hinjin Ryu, no timetable right now to return from his shoulder injury. He's playing catch, and that's all he's doing. Alex Cobb's in the same boat, Bernie. A different injury for Cobb.
Let's go back. Well, we can talk about both these guys. Now, when you are just playing catch in April, what does that tell you about, let's say he's cleared tomorrow to pitch off a mound? How long do you think that'll be?
3 to 4 weeks, for sure.
How much?
At least 3 to 4 weeks.
You got it. There is no question in my mind you're looking at June for both these guys.
Most likely, you're right, because I think in Cobb's case, he's going to need something that looks a lot like a full spring training, and Ryu probably will too. So late May, maybe on the more optimistic side, but June does seem more likely for both, even though
that's if they're cleared tomorrow.
And technically, they don't even have a timetable, so that's
right.
Pretty vague. Felix Hernandez expected to make his next scheduled start after leaving with a quad and ankle injury last time out. Any reason at all to be concerned about King Felix?
Yes, sir. My yellow light is on because of the quad injury. Not so much the ankle. And by the way, I think they're on opposite feet, right?
I think they are. I think they're on different legs.
Yeah, yeah. Legs, not feet. I am worried about the quad. That's how the push off. That's the land. I'm worried about it. Okay, it's yellow light, not red light, but it's something to watch very carefully. I don't think he's going to miss time. It could affect his land. It could affect his push off. It's a caution light. I'd like to hear what Jeff Stotts had to say about it, but it's troublesome to me.
Yeah, he didn't share quite the same level of optimism as what Hernandez had expressed after the injury, but it's a matter of seeing just how he responds too. It's more of a wait and see than a push the panic button situation, I think, with Felix Hernandez. Two more injuries to get to here, Bernie. Derek Holland already hits the 60-day DL with a shoulder strain. I don't think we're going to see him before the second half.
No, I'm not sure you're going to see him then. It's a shoulder. So that's no good. That means that if he gets those 60 days rest, 2 months, 3 months, what happens when he comes back? Does he start all over and the shoulder barks again? Or do they go in now, do some exploratory, find a cuff problem? Who knows? And that's another one. That's a red light. That's not a yellow light. That's a red light.
He might even be a cut for me in grass ball at this point.
Yeah.
Waiting to get a cheap keeper back, maybe. And that's just not worth it as you try to be competitive in this season with a bench and no real DL spots. One other injury, Alex Rios suffered a broken hand after getting hit by a pitch, got placed on the 15-day DL on Tuesday. I think when I talked to Jeff Stotts about this one, the suggestion was going to be a minimum of 3 weeks, probably more like 5 to 6 weeks before Alex Rios is ready to return. The Royals have called up Terrence Gore from AA. Jared Dyson and Paulo Orlando will likely get most of the extra playing time. I would think Terrence Gore just takes Dyson's role as that late-inning bench outfielder, and Dyson probably actually plays more than Orlando in the coming weeks.
I think you're right, and I put Dyson on my grass ball team. He's my utility player, and he's there for a reason. I'll explain it. He didn't play, but he'll come off the bench, steal bases. That's a league that values extra bases. He would get them, and that's why I put him on there, and now it's even better.
One suspension item to pass along, Henry Mejia, who was already shelf with an elbow injury, gets an 80-game suspension for a positive test for steroids. Stanislav, I got to work on my pronunciation of steroids. That's a new one. But 80 games, same substance that Irvin Santana tested positive for just a couple of weeks ago. It leaves the Mets in a difficult spot. I mean, they're one of the many teams that I think are on the closer carousel right now. We'll dive into that in just a little bit. But let's talk about the grass ball auction. We've kind of dipped our toes in it a little bit here. As far as the auction goes, it's the last one I had for the season. It went down on Saturday. I finished the auction while doing the XM show, which was a feat in juggling, you know, using different parts of your brain, I guess. And my team turned out okay overall. But part of what makes this league so difficult is that the inflation is really bad, and the categories are not the same standard 5x5 categories. So the prices for me are just totally unpredictable.
You are 100% correct. I have Derek. You spent $50 for Miguel Cabrera, and guess what? You were right. He's already earned a profit for you. I don't know how you could do it. I didn't think you would do it. I kept watching it and saying, that's not the DVR I know. $50? But guess what? You guessed right.
I don't even know what he's worth in this league, though. I honestly don't. I don't know if he's a $70 player that we undervalue or if he's a $35 player that we overvalue. I mean, it's equally likely that he's either one because I don't play in any other league that uses the same categories as this one does. I mean, it's just a blindfold guess, really. He's the best player behind Mike Trout in the American League, and now I've got them both, but I don't think I have any real quality depth players, especially my pitching. My pitching is cheap. I don't have any pitchers that cost more than $9.
I had superstars for 2 years and didn't win it. Now I went with average guys, and believe it or not, except for Joe Mauer, I got every one of my target players. And that, well, I may have missed out on a couple. In fact, I did, maybe two. But I'll tell you, I took a different approach this year. I don't want superstars. They haven't helped me. I saved a little bit of money. I don't know how I'm going to end up, but right now everybody's bunched up. Every day it changes. You know, I've been first, I've been fourth. This is such a close league. Anyone can win. You can have great pitching and lose. You can have great hitting and lose. That's because these are more true to baseball categories than they are roto.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. And my team outside of Cabrera, I mean, based on the prices of some of my keepers especially, Mike Trout is, I think, a $23 player in this league, if I remember right, or $27 player, something along those lines. Because I signed into a multi-year contract a few years ago. And it's things like that that drive up the price of players who make it into the auction. As far as what I did in the auction, though, Bernie, I pretty much didn't spend a lot on anybody. I mean, it was just plunk a bunch of money down for Cabrera and fill in with guys who I think are going to play a lot. And, you know, it worked out. I felt like Chase Headley at 15 was okay for a league like this. I thought Joe Mauer at 9 was actually a great value.
I couldn't believe it. And, you know, I dropped at 9, and I should have gone to 10 because I had money left on the table because I wanted it for the bench players. But here are some of your costs. You're at 50 for Cabrera, you're at 35 for Bautista, 27 for Ellsbury, and 22 for Trout. And, you know, that's not bad. They're great players. Those are four guys that could lead you, you know, to a championship.
It's just a matter of whether or not my pitching holds up, though, because my pitching right now is a major Achilles heel. Anibal Sanchez at 9 was a keeper. Derek Holland at 5 was a keeper. He got hurt a few days before the auction, so I couldn't throw him back. And with him already in there, it just took away a roster spot. But guys like Jay Happ, $3. I mean, an AL-only league, I felt like that was okay. TJ House at 4. Man, he got hit hard in his first time out. That was just a really bad start to put on there. Wade Miley at 8, which I think most days will be okay, but today it was not. Didn't get out of the third inning today. Joe Kelly at 3. I mean, it's an ugly staff, but this league doesn't count strikeouts as a category. So it's more about guys who can get deep in games and win than anything else.
6 innings and win. That's the key. I have Buchholz at 8, Kluber at 15, Porcello at 15, Matt Shoemaker at 13. Those are my starters. But I also picked up, and Derek, I was scared to death of you on this. I picked up Carlos Rodon at 18. I waited for you. I waited for you. You didn't respond, and I was thrilled. He was my number one target.
I couldn't pay that much for him. I knew you had money left, but I also knew that I couldn't pay $19 for Carlos Rodon right now in that league. It just didn't. It would have left me thin other places, even though I think there's a chance he's earning that in the not-so-distant future. I mean, again, this league has crazy inflation, so it's very different. The prices don't make any sense at all to me. And was there anything that you thought other than, I mean, I thought Mauer really was a great value. Was there anybody else in the auction who went for a lot less than you expected?
Not less. I don't think less. But I'm very upset with myself for buying Pablo Sandoval for $28. He was one of 2 third basemen left on my list. I had nobody else to turn to. I had money left, and there it went. And he's not going to earn $28. Guys that went for less, I'd have to go over the whole list. But, you know, the end game, there were cheap guys, clearly. But actually, it was a fun draft. It just went on way too long. You and I went at it a lot between each other. And I, you know, I had duels with 15 guys in that draft. In that auction.
I'm curious about Kevin Kiermaier. He went for $4 in this
auction. I was curious. Yeah.
That seems like a really nice buy. Kiermaier's a strange player, though, Bernie, because if you read, let's just say that you read the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, which is where I got some information on Kiermaier. I didn't really know much about him. The read there is that he's more of a 45, maybe a 50, but probably a 45-grade player. It seems like over the last 6 months, or I guess over the last year now, 6 months would have been the offseason, he's actually kind of rounded that up to where more people look at him as a very solid 50 than a 45.
I was filled in the outfield and at designated hitter, so I couldn't take him. And that's why I was furious, because I really wanted him. He's a 50. He's an everyday player. And he's on his way to being a 55. He's hitting much better than everybody thought he would. And he's a world-class defender. And that helps get him the 50.
Keeps him on the field more consistently, too. Rays have been leading him off recently. So I think that $4 buy of Kevin Kiermaier might go down as one of the best ones late in our AL-only auction. Let's move on to the closer carousel, Bernie. One of the big surprises in the auction was the price on Miguel Castro, $21 for Miguel Castro, who has sort of taken over that closer role for Toronto. The question really becomes, does he keep it?
He's 20 years old. He's 20 years old. And he's got the weight of the world on him. I don't know if he can keep it. And I think that's a volatile situation. They really never went into the season with a closer. He won it by default because Cecil was hurt. Cecil was not effective. So all of a sudden, bam, in less than 2 weeks, you've got a 20-year-old on the mound closing out games for you. Granted, he's got ice water in his veins and he looks the part. But I couldn't pay it. I didn't pay it.
I thought at 10 or 11, I would have been okay with taking the chance, but this could be a revolving door, just given the lack of experience there. And you brought this up on the radio show today. What happens when teams get to see him a second and third time? Is his stuff going to be good enough right away to overcome that? And maybe it is. The arm is fantastic, but he's making the leap from high A to the big leagues and getting a prominent role from really day one almost, with Brett Cecil showing diminished velocity over the course of the spring training and now the first week to 10 days here. The Yankees are going through a transition in the closer role. It seems to be Andrew Miller over Dylan Betances. I thought Betances would get 2/3 of the save chances, maybe even 3/4. I thought Betances could be a top 5 closer if he was able to take the job and run with it. But the velocity hasn't been there. The command hasn't been there. He doesn't look like the same guy right now, Bernie.
He didn't in spring training and so far in the season. But I remind you, it's a long year. I still think that these guys are going to share saves before it's all over. I think Miller's the prominent guy. Betances is the secondary guy. But here's the bottom line for me. I think it's going to be situational. There will be times when Betances pitches the eighth, big right-handed hitters come up in the ninth, Betances stays in. So I would not cut him, and I would not go after him, but I would still say I think he's going to get his share of opportunities. Just too many big right-handed hitters that they may not want Andrew Miller facing.
Yeah, they may keep mixing and matching here as the season rolls along, but I think if you had to guess how the saves will be split based on what we've seen so far, I feel like it's more like 60-40 or even 70-30 Miller, yeah. But subject to change almost and after any given stretch.
I agree. But now you see Bautista coming up in the ninth with Encarnacion coming up in the ninth. And you say to yourself, you know, what do I do? Nelson Cruz coming up in the ninth when you're playing Seattle. What do I do? Cruz, you know, has a hole with sliders that we have seen. So what happens if you put a lefty in there? I just don't know. That's why I think there's enough right-handed hitters, big ones, that's going to put Betances in the ninth inning.
Let's move over to the NL West. Adam Ottavino named the Rockies closer on Tuesday. He struck out the side Tuesday night in his first save opportunity of the season. Troy Hawkins jettisoned to the sixth inning. He tossed a 1-2-3 sixth on Tuesday, by the way. But for me, it's Ottavino, and I think he's got the stuff to be a top 10 closer. Rafael Betancourt, to me, is the next in line. He got the save on Monday. Over-under, rest of the season. If I said the over-under is going to be 22.5 saves for Adam Ottavino, which side do you take?
I think that's about right. I think that's about right. I don't know that they'll. I think Betancourt will get a couple chances and probably poach a few. And you don't know that what they'll do with Hawkins. I think he's a sixth inning guy, like you said. He may get more than 22. It depends on if they can keep this roll up, and it's very tough. I'll take the 22.5. How about you?
I'll take the over on it. I mean, I don't think he's going to crush it to the point where he gets 40 or anything like that, but I could see him getting into the 30s in terms of save chances. And
very possible.
You know,
he's a high 90s guy. He's got a lot of heat.
Filthy slider, too. Really nasty pitch. I think you could see pretty much a strikeout per inning with good control, good ratios. Even though he pitches in Colorado, it's going to matter a lot less for him as a reliever just because he's not going to go out there two and three times against the same lineup and all that. So I think without Avino, he probably finishes between 10th and 12th among closers when it's all said and done this year. Easy to say it now, or I guess harder to say it now before he's done it for a few weeks. But this might be the last time you can go out and trade for him and not give up what you had to give up to get a top 10 closer.
Let me give you my caution about him. There's two issues. Number one is if he gets the ball up in the hitter's eyes or at their chest level at 94, it could be parked over the wall in Colorado. If he's 97, they could swing and miss. Those 3 miles an hour are a huge difference when a ball's up in your eyes. The other issue, hanging sliders. If he hangs those against a good hitter in Colorado, that's problematic. But those are the only two Achilles heels that I see. On the road, I think he's going to be awesome.
One other situation. Make that two situations I want to get to. The Dodgers without Kenley Jansen. Joel Peralta in the lead right now. Does he continue to get most of the save chances until Kenley Jansen gets back, or do you think Chris Hatcher wrestles his way back into the mix?
I think Hatcher's going to get his share. I don't know that Peralta can do it night in and night out. He's got some age on him. He's got some pitches on that arm. I think Hatcher's going to get some shots. I'm not cutting him yet. I don't think it's just a one-man band. I mean, we're talking about how much time now until they get their closer back.
Probably May. I think he's working to the mound now. So a few weeks, at least as a reliever, he doesn't need as much time to stretch out as he would if he were a starter. But probably not going to see him before the end of this month. So at least a couple of weeks for Peralta and possibly Hatcher to chew up some more save chances. I feel like Peralta's got it where he's going to earn most of those opportunities. Hatcher got the save on opening day, but he's kind of blown up ever since then. One more here, Detroit. Joaquin Soria just got his fourth save of the season as we recorded, shutting the door on the Pirates for the second night in a row. Joe Nathan is expected to be back soon after the 15-day minimum. He's got the flexor tendon strain in his right forearm. Does Brad Ausmus just make the switch? Does Soria take over this job and keep it even after Nathan comes back?
Great question. If it's you or if it's me, I know what we would do. I'm pretty sure I know what you would do. You would not go back to Nathan. I would not go back to Nathan. I would go with what's working. The team is on a roll. You know, give Joe Nathan a couple months to get better and keep it the way it is. Isn't that what you would do?
Yeah, I'm not going back to Joe Nathan. I know you get the one-out save on opening day.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean anything. A one-out save is nothing. Anybody can come in and get a one-out save. He was roughed up in spring training. He was roughed up throughout last season. Unless the stuff is back to the point where he looks like he did a couple seasons ago, and I don't think that's going to be the case because Nathan is just old at this point. Soria's better. I mean, he's the better option.
Yeah.
If we're going to manage to the save rule, and most teams do, well, Soria is their best option. So I would let Soria keep it. I don't know. I feel like Ausmus would at least go back to Nathan and make Nathan cough up the job healthy as opposed to just taking it away while he's hurt.
You know what? This is for all the marbles. I couldn't do that. You know, I would make Soria my closer until he lost the job. And so far, he has shown me nothing but the ability to get the job done. Don't, if it's not broken, don't try to fix it.
Yeah, maybe my read of Brad Ausmus is wrong. We'll see here in the coming weeks once Nathan finally...
Well, they're paying Nathan a lot of money, so it may not just be Brad Ausmus.
But they're paying Nathan a lot of money no matter what. Whether he's hurt, whether he's good, whether he's bad, they got to pay him no matter what. I think this is a team that their window for the World Series could be closing. And with that...
No pun intended.
You do not want to make a mistake with the hierarchy of things in your bullpen. A couple of minor league observations here, Bernie, before we sign off. I got to see Cody Medeiros, the 12th overall pick in the draft last June. 6 no-hit innings against Low A Peoria in his full season debut. And yet the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers lost that game by 10 runs. Have you ever seen that before?
No. I'm sure you were impressed, though, right? You're happy.
Oh, I was thrilled that Medeiros, he was untouchable. I mean, I don't think a ball, even a foul ball, was hit past the infield dirt. I mean, there was nothing in terms of solid contact against him at all. So very encouraging for sure, especially against a team like Peoria with Cardinals farmhands on it. You know, you expect players to exceed expectations on a team like that. But huge debut for Cody Medeiros. I got to see Monty Harrison, who was a supplemental first rounder last year. He was leading off in that game. Looks really fast. I think that's going to be his carrying tool. He ran a ton in the Gulf, or not the Gulf Coast League, the Arizona Rookie League last year.
Yes.
Legitimately going to be, I think, a very good prospect in no time. But the player I think that I really wanted to see, aside from Medeiros, was on the other side. For the Cardinals, Magnery Sierra was the Cardinals Minor League Player of the Year last year. He looked outstanding. He was playing center field. Very windy day on Sunday. Made an outstanding catch in center field. He went head first through the bullpen gate. Stayed in the game. He was okay.
Wow.
But great closing speed, great routes to the ball. Drove the ball to the opposite field. And actually it wasn't an opposite field. He pulled it up down the line. But showed pretty decent the gap-type power. I think he's going to be a special player. I know.
Yeah, it's going to be on the fast track, to tell you the truth. I really do.
He might be the kind of guy that this time next year we're talking about him as their best position player prospect. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I don't think you're going to see a lot of power from him in the long run. I think, again, it's more of like a 6-8 home run bat, but I think he's a prototypical leadoff hitter. He's going to show some pretty good on-base skills and probably get you 35 or 40 steals annually. I think that's the type of player he's going to be in the long run.
That's exciting. And that's the kind of guy we like to watch.
With great defense in center field, too. I think that's all going to be there. So, yet again, the Cardinals strike gold, it seems, with Magnery Sierra. A couple other things that stood out to me. Andrew Heaney, very good in his first AAA start with the Angels. 7 scoreless innings, just 2 hits, 8 strikeouts. He has nothing left to prove at AAA. He's got to be up soon, Bernie.
Yeah, he will be. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They didn't give up Howie Kendrick to keep this guy in AAA.
No, I think it's just a matter of waiting maybe a couple of weeks to try to keep from getting that full year of service time. Maybe that's something I'm thinking about.
That's exactly right.
So maybe by mid-May we'll see him. I know he made a few starts for the Marlins last year, so I don't know the exact service time, but they may have to hold him down longer than the Cubs hold down Chris Bryant, who entering play Wednesday, by the way, Chris Bryant hitting .375, 2 homers, 7 runs driven in, doing exactly what you'd expect him to do at AAA Iowa to start the year. I think he's up Friday because that's the first possible day the Cubs can call him up without letting him get a full year of service time.
And you could be right. I don't know, and I have not heard, but it makes sense. And if they do it on Friday, then they are openly saying that's why we sent him down, as opposed to he needs to work on his defense. He isn't playing third base anyway.
Right. In the long term, that's not going to be where he lands. Maybe this year they keep him there, but I think it's a lot like the Ryan Braun situation a few years ago where he begins his career there and pretty quickly makes an adjustment and ends up in the outfield. Anything else you want to throw out there from the first week or first week in change now, Bernie?
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, DVR, we could talk for 3 hours. We really could. But we're going to have to cut it for tonight. We'll talk more about the next on next week's show about the first 3 weeks, and we'll save some of the things for then. But what do you have going on? Because I want to tell you what's what's happening on Pipeline. But first, let's hear from you.
Pretty quiet week for me. Haven't had a chance to write anything in season yet. So hopefully by Friday, I'll have something in the blog. If not Friday, by Monday. What's coming up at Pipeline?
I've got a blog on at Bernie's Baseball World tonight. I hope people will read it tonight, tomorrow, the next day, whenever. But on Pipeline, my profiles are on the following. Marco Gonzalez is up today. Devon Travis was yesterday. You'll see James McCann, Jace Peterson, Chris Heston, and Alex Guerrero in the next week. So six profiles in this week and next. And I go into a little bit of detail about their history.
Be sure to check those out at MLBpipeline.com. The views and opinions of Short Hops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast, please contact Shannon at rotowire.com. Also, be sure to check out SideLeague.com and download SideLeague for Android or the iPhone. Thanks again for listening to Short Hops, powered by SideLeague.com. We'll be back with you next week. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always.
Pleasure's all mine, DVR, and good luck this week to everybody with your fantasy teams, and just have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care. I'll be back with you next week.